Interview with George Esser, Director, Southern Regional Council, May 2nd, 1974, Atlanta.
One, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that little note I wrote to you, thing commenting on potential coalition you saw maybe forming in the South.
Well,
what do you see? Where do you see things going?
It's hard to define those things, but I believe that coalitions both are possible and that we see evidence in different ways. I think that what's happened in Raleigh and what's happened in Petersburg and what's happening in the Georgia governor's race are all examples that there's a lot more shifting of votes, a lot more ad hoc relationships than certainly there were 6 to 8 years ago. The very fact that you discover that the black vote is going to break 2 or 3 ways here, I think, is an example. You see a lot more of that than you saw several years ago in the South, which means that, well, in this state, looking at the Georgia governor's race, it's interesting that the different candidates are picking different issues, which means that they're looking for coalitions much more than it was, let's say, 4 years ago or 8 years ago here in this very same state. I think that there will be much more that we'll see many the impact of different combinations of votes more frequently in the future than we have in the past. Because really up until 2 to 4 years ago, in most cases, the black vote was in most races pretty much of a unit. And like in North Carolina, while you tended to have a breakout of the liberal vote and the moderate vote and the segregationist vote, I don't think it's going that way as much anymore. The very fact of the tactics of Wallace right now is interesting to me. I think that it's not succeeding in every case, but you know, the fact he's going out to seek not only the black vote, but concentrating on issues he never concentrated on before is an interesting development.
Which issues are you speaking of?
Well, he's putting a lot more emphasis on some of the human service programs. Of course, he had to. He was put in a position where he had to file his court decision. I don't think we've adequately reported the extent to which the Alabama state government was under the gun from court decisions. But it seems to me that he's been putting a lot more emphasis on reaching black groups and relatively poor groups in terms of this year's gubernatorial race than he ever did before. And he's got some, he's bought some blacks. He's bought Johnny Ford, several others. Only Johnny Ford's going to be able to deliver any votes. But,
are they forced to discuss those issues because race as an open issue is gone?
Well, up until recently, Walt, I don't know. I think race is the as the surface issue, you know, is rapidly receding. But I think that there are a lot of symbols that are used in place of race. I don't think that they are as universal as race was 10 years ago. But I think that, you know, 4 years ago it was law and order. We still got a lot of talk about by Southern politicians about welfare. What they're really talking about is black mothers. Certainly race is not nearly so much the open issue that it was.
How about busing?
10 or 5 years ago. Well, you see, we haven't gotten any talk on busing. The moment you mention busing, a friend of mine from Florida told me that Askew was running 75-25, this was late last fall, against this probable Republican candidate, but that Republican candidate, if he used busing, Askew's 72 statements on busing could probably close the gap fairly quickly. Busing is still an issue here, there's no question. I mean, in the South, there's no question about it. But it isn't an issue. It's an issue in this town. It's an issue in the big cities that haven't had desegregation. In the rural areas, it may still be an emotional issue. It is not a practical issue because you've got basically desegregation in most of the rural areas.
It's not a practical issue, but even in the rural areas, isn't it still a direct racial appeal? I mean, the word is clearly understood in those terms, isn't it?
Clearly understood. I guess what I'm saying is that I don't see race in its explicit terms as an issue, but as we get closer and closer to the election, you know, there'll be, whatever the state, there'll be more and more ways that you can discern what the racial appeal is. Because there will be a racial appeal, because that is a proven vote getter. But it'll be masked in some way. Not that it'll be difficult for you to pick it out, but it'll be masked.
Still think it's the way to get elected?
Well, it isn't the way to get elected straight. You know, I don't think the very fact that there is there is a growing feeling in this state that Maddox is not a shoo-in is evidence that it isn't the only way to get elected. Of course, Maddox is a figure that is somewhat different from a lot of other figures, a lot of other politicians. And he's driven away a lot of support, not only by his colorful defense of the Southern way of life, but it's also driven away a lot of support by the way he handled the Senate the last two sessions, his association with a group of power brokers. But I would say as between, I don't think that most Southern states are I would say this, a candidate who makes clear where he stands on the racial issue and still deals with some of the issues that affect most other people is going to be stronger than anyone who tries to make it a straightforward, clean campaign. Because there is, the South has still got very deep roots racism. It's being reflected in different ways, but they're there. You know, I like the fact that you don't have it as an open issue, but I went back to Washington with Andy on weekend last year and went to a meeting together. And they had just had the vote on some vote in the House of Representatives that I think was related to busing. He was as low as I've ever seen him because he realized, of course, that wasn't Southern, that was national. But he said the House was a shambles in that whole situation. Sit here and listen to on TV to the Georgia General Assembly, which I did frequently this winter before I went to bed, the education TV station, rebroadcast a lot of it. Astounding amount of purely out and out racist rhetoric that the newspapers didn't generally report. But when you listened to what they were saying, well, there was no question about where they were coming from. Now, how the politician decides he's going to approach that issue in terms of getting votes, I guess what I'm saying is that I've seen that in the process of change, and we haven't gotten along far enough in this election to determine how it's going to be reflected. Which politician is going to come out using that as an issue, or whether they're all going to leave that issue to Maddox in the first primary, which they may do. Well, I don't know about the minor candidates, but I mean Gambrell, Busby, Lance, and Roland may leave that to Maddox in the first primary. And I haven't been following enough of the either the South Carolina gubernatorial or the North Carolina senatorial. No, but you all have been seeing it a lot more closely at hand than I have. And I would say that the black leadership I've seen in the past 2 months are hopeful, but not confident that there's any real shift this year. Now, John Lewis was very disturbed that there seemed to be a a breaking away, not only on the part of Ford, but on the part of some other lower-level black leadership in Alabama to Wallace, and that's why he came out. That's why he went down and made the strong statement. So far, there's nothing like that. I don't think there's anything like that in Mississippi. Your problem states are still the deep southern states, or the deep south areas of a state like this, rather than certainly Atlanta is not a big problem in that respect.
Are you saying that people's attitudes have basically not changed?
Well, I'm saying that they're in the process of changing, Walt, but they haven't changed as much as we would like to think they have. I think that's what I would say. Is now the press, the media, do not report nearly as much of the racist attitudes as they used to. And as I say, I think you see a real shift toward the use of symbols rather than outright racial arguments in political campaigns. But I think that there's still some very deep antagonisms in this region, tending to be more in the rural areas than in the urban areas. But not just a making progress, but we're making it slowly.
Is it your feeling about the rural area just based on, is it intuitive and a hunch, or is it something based more on your having been out there and talked to people or any kind of thing?
Well, it's talking to people, it's listening to those rural Georgia legislators. And you know, they weren't holding back. They were quite explicit. Talking to people who are working in rural areas. But I wouldn't say that my impressions are have any sort of I haven't been out that much. You've been out a lot more than I have. It's more of my impressions on talking to people than anything else.
We haven't. We just. It's hard for us to get out in the rural areas a whole heck of a lot because of the limited time we have when we go into.
And we had a group of 35 community organization leaders from across the region 6 weeks ago. It's very clear they don't have any confidence in any political leader in the region that they have seen. I mean, statewide political leader, they would accept Andy for that. On the other hand, when you look, you know, it's interesting when you look at the acceptance in Alabama and South Carolina after much effort to avoid the law, but they're both having to go to single-member districts in the election of the General Assembly this year, and that's going to mean a significant, in Alabama, it's going to mean a fairly significant shift in representation.
In South Carolina, it's going to mean a substantial increase in black legislation, percentage-wise, I mean, maybe 5 or 6 more instead of 3. It's also likely to result in a substantial increase in Republican legislators.
Well, in this state, there will probably be 6 to 8 new black legislators, additional districts where blacks will be elected. But that's still no, they're not about to have a majority anymore.
How do you view North Carolina now from a distance?
Overrated.
We had one quote back to from Farrell Geller. He said, the further you get from North Carolina, the more progressive it looks.
In some ways, but I have found.
Well, he meant it in the reverse sense, though, of your being detached, but in fact, the nearer you get to it and see it, the less progressive you find.
No. No, I think that North Carolina has not kept pace.
Why, though? What do you attribute that?
Well, I think one of the factors for that question without saying why it happened, but I think that the decline of the university is sort of the conscience of the state and producing a really unusual type of leadership for the state has hurt the state. I think it was a period from 1915 to 1950. Some reason, leadership, whatever. An unusual quality of leadership is being turned out at the University of North Carolina. Even those people who are most conservative certainly they were less racist than their counterparts in the rest of the state. At that time, the quality of state and local government in both North Carolina and Virginia was it was relatively honest. Not only it was relatively forward, but it was relatively honest. Whereas in the deep southern states, there was a lot of down corruption, political leadership of these states at that time. Well, these states have changed. The quality of, I think you can chart a very distinct change in the quality of administration, the kind of people who are in state government across the South. States that have really had problems are cleaning them out. Not all of them are cleaned out, but you've got Florida all of a sudden moving up in a 10-year period from one of the worst state governments in the country to one of the best. It's not only Reuben Askew, it's also the strength of a group of legislators. You've got Louisiana undergoing, in some part, its first major reorganization since Huey Long days, directed in part at raising the quality of administration. I'm saying that only to say that North Carolina is probably no different in the quality of its state administration than it always has been, but it doesn't come through by contrast nearly as much as it used to, because the other states have caught up to it or gone ahead of it.
I have a theory on that, and I'd just like to get your reaction to it. The theory is that during the 60s, early to middle 60s, during the period of really real confrontation in the South, where the real confrontation occurred for the most part was in the deeper South. There was not a whole lot of it in North Carolina. North Carolina was almost bypassed. You had to sit into Greensboro, but you really didn't have the more direct confrontation that took place in the deeper South. And as a result, the deeper South has reacted. Once the reaction came in what we would consider a more positive sense, it went further. There was more reaction in those states to those events.
Well, I think that is true of the strength of the civil rights movement in North Carolina. That there was never a civil rights movement in North Carolina as strong as it was in those areas where SCLC and SNCC were operating. It just never was. There were confrontations, but they tended to be in the cities. So that the strength of the black vote, or the strength of black leadership, is not as strong in North Carolina today, relatively speaking, as it was 15 years ago. In terms of the leadership of the rest of the state, obviously the absence of a strong civil rights movement has meant that there hasn't been that kind of reaction. On the other hand, North Carolina's got the highest number, or the second highest number, of black elected officials in local government in the country, which indicates an acceptance. There are more, I think you ought to look into this. I think that there are more black elected officials in North Carolina than in any other state serving in predominantly white communities, which means that there's, which is another measure that there was never a real confrontation and things didn't split as much on racial lines. In terms of general leadership, I think that the thing to remember is that for a variety of reasons, North Carolina had governors who were almost accidents in terms of their image. that they were really, that the governors beginning with Carr Scott and ending with Terry Sanford were all really ahead of the state. But there's never been a, quote, liberal, close quote, whatever that means, vote of more than about 30-35%. Terry Sanford was elected because there were four candidates in the primary. If there had only been three, he might not have even gotten in the runoff. Or if he'd gotten in the runoff, I think he might have lost. Because that's what happened to Rich Pryor in 64, when there were only three candidates.
Terry had to the been left running. Of Terry in the race situation. Mm-hmm. Plus, Sewell was to the left of Terry on the race situation.
Oh, in some ways, but he was a much, he was a, on the other hand, he was a much more conservative philosophical. Sewell didn't get a lot of liberal vote. He might have gotten a little black vote.
But you took the stigma away from Terry in the process.
Took the stigma away from Terry in that process. But on the other hand, if only if it had been Sewell or Larkins instead of Sewell and Larkins, there's a strong possibility that Sewell or Larkins would have beaten Lake. I forget the figures. That's what happened in 64. But when you got Lake in there and you got the polarized candidate, a lot of the Sewell Larkins vote went to Terry that really didn't believe in Terry. Same thing had happened on the Carr Scott vote. Carr Scott, is a really good example of a man who got elected on old populist principles. I mean, the Branch Head Boys was a reality. But this gave North Carolina. Luther Hodges was not a great liberal, but he was a very decent man, and he did some pretty good things. This gave North Carolina an image that was better than the quality of its, better than the quality, I think, of the state as a whole. And that a lot of people really didn't realize that in the accidents of things, that it could have been a governor. Larkins or a Governor Lake or who was R. Scott's Charles S. Johnson. The kind of leadership that was there enhanced North Carolina's reputation more than probably it merited. The same thing is true today of the university. The university is a fine university, but it is not a leader in the sense that it was under Frank Green. It doesn't set the tone, it doesn't set a goal for the, it doesn't seek to be, not only it can be today, but under Frank Graham and his predecessors, the university was always setting some goals for the state.
And for the region.
And for the region. Well, they've lost all interest in the region that isn't fashionable today.
Can we talk about the region for a bit? In the period from 48 through 74, what are the basic changes that occurred in the South as a region?
Well, the biggest change is the translation from, one of the biggest changes. Yes, the two biggest changes are one's the end of segregation, and the other is the translation from agriculture as the dominant economy to manufacturing. Everything else flows from that.
How is it distinctive from the rest of the country now that segregation has ended and has moved into an industrialized economy?
Well, it is significant from the rest of the country only in the it is not nearly as different from the rest of the country as it was then. It is, I guess, significant mainly in the existence of byproducts of that shift. I mean, of the old system shifting to the new. That you have a higher proportion of you still have a much higher proportion of poverty, you have a lower proportion of education, you have a higher proportion of health defects. Those sorts of things are really carryovers from the old South. There is still, I think, more of that for the region, there is more of a sense of a subjective sense of regional identification than in most regions. I don't think it's a, you know, I don't think it's a major sense of identification, but there is some. The fact that it's growing faster economically means, and that it had not grown, that we had not, with the exception of Florida, that it had not grown rapidly, gives the region as region an opportunity to do some things better than other regions have done. Everything isn't set in concrete yet, but it's mighty getting there mighty goddamn fast. But obviously, the South is much more a part of the nation today than it was 25 years ago. Much more like, and it's more like the rest of the nation in another way, because gradually the population of the South is getting, it's changing in terms of in-migration of people from, you know, this city. It'd be interesting to take a sample of this city to see where people come from. Certainly a much higher proportion of those people living in Atlanta today come from other parts of the country than did 15 years ago. It's really not a southern city in the same sense it was 15 years ago. It's more of a national city, because the industries, the businesses, the sales forces, communications bring people in.
What have all those changes to the current? Would it make any sense in 10 years or 20 years to talk about Southern politics as being different from Western politics or New England politics or Midwest? The Southern politics, you know, starting with D.O. Key, his hypothesis was that it was based on race.
Yeah, well, I think that we're going to, if we follow the trends of the last 10 years, differences are going to disappear more and more. There'll be less regional identification, less that race will be less of a factor, that it will be much less distinctive about the region than there is today, or there particularly than there was. I came back to the South from law school in 1948. Years you just cited, there have been just tremendous changes, and they happened almost without, in some ways, without you realizing they've happened. One of the things I found interesting, Walt, is that when I came here trying to get a fix on it, is how little real research had been done about the South as in terms of really understanding that. Some from a racial point of view, but looking at the total point of view, a lot of things you would have thought that somebody in a region that thought it had regional characteristics would have looked at. That you would think that a lot of the research had been done, but it hadn't been done. I mean, there wasn't a good understanding of, you know, we had to do simple things like the demographic analysis, which we're getting out now. 3 weeks of the 60 to 70 years, except for what the census had done, very little pieces from every region.
Oh, the demographics are different than the rest of the country?
They're still different. The South is still, you know, if you're on a seesaw, the South is still below the national average on almost is different from the national average.
Using socioeconomic indicators. But as the South continues to industrialize,
you're changing that.
Become more urban.
It's gradually approaching the national average, but it's still distinctly different from the national average today as a region. But in 20 years,
it's different also, and it still has black people in rural areas.
Yeah, it's different. You see, rural areas are significant in two ways. One is that you have 90% of the rural black poor live in the South. But the other is that the South is also the major area where where 48% of the poor live in rural areas. Now, in significant parts of the South, that's white. The Ozarks, Mid-Tennessee, the Appalachians, some parts of North Carolina, that's white poor, not black poor. But in the Middle West, by contrast, where you don't have nearly as high a proportion of rural poverty as opposed to all poverty as you do in the South.
Has anybody analyzed the census data on Atlanta to determine whether or not the population between 1970 and 1960 is significantly different in terms of where people came from?
There has been that done, and I can... have you seen the... Lucy and Gretchen in our library could guide you to this. There are two people who've looked at it. One is the Southern Regional Demographic Group has looked at it.
At Oak Ridge?
Yeah, at migration patterns from several southern cities. And Everett Lee at the University of Georgia has done some of this. For example, Everett did one study that's related to this and very interesting. In a 5-year period from 62 to 67, see if I can remember precisely what it was. The question of how many people there were per job in that period, this was Social Security. In effect, there was little turnover in the 180,000 people at the low wage end of the scale. But at the high wage end of the scale, there were 2.5 times as many people holding those jobs in the 5-year period as there were jobs, which meant just a continual turnover, most of it from outside the city. People coming in to take the job and people leaving the job going outside the city, going away from the city.
Right, I understand that, but my question would be the actual, is that just a changing of quote outsiders, sort of a concept? Changing of quote outsiders, or was this an expansion in percentage of quote outsiders?
I can't tell you, and that, but I would say that you ought to look at that Oak Ridge data, and you ought to talk to Ed Lee.
I'm just curious about it because
my feeling is that it is true that there are a higher proportion of non-Southerners in Atlanta today than there were 10 or 15 years ago.
When you talk of Atlanta, are you talking about SMSA?
The metropolitan area.
The five counties.
Yeah. Because you go out in Cobb, Gwinnett, Clayton, and that's where the new subdivision is.
Almost everyone we talk to says that Atlanta is not a southern city. And yet, we keep hearing other people saying that all the people who live out in those suburbs, a heck of a lot of them are people who came from rural Georgia, from small towns.
Some of them are, but a lot of them.
And that's why I'm just wondering, did anybody really analyze the data carefully on that?
No, I just can't. I say if anyone is likely to, it's Everett Lee at the University of Georgia. I think that there's one point that is significant. A lot of people have left Atlanta. A lot of them were from rural Georgia, from Atlanta, left Atlanta, but left southwest Atlanta for the suburb. All those white suburbs that were built in southwest Atlanta in the 60s are now black suburbs. Change took place, I understand, in just about 5 years. But I don't find, you know, that's something that ought to be probed, because some of the evidence I've seen, and I mean, this again is subjective evidence, is that the people who come into Atlanta from outside are just as likely or more likely to go out into the all-white suburb. Actually, in southwest Atlanta today, you will find that the resident white population, which makes it a mixed, integrated area, are people who have always lived there. I mean, they're Atlantans who have said, I'm not going to give up my home. But a lot of their neighbors moved out. But I know several white families who live over there and have just continued to live there. I've got black staff members on SRC who've got white neighbors in an essentially black neighborhood. They aren't people who moved in, they're people who just stayed. But the proportionate change in the analysis of where people live in Atlanta and who, and where they came from and how long they've been in Atlanta, I don't know of a good analysis of that. And this is another frustrating thing, is that you do not find universities, black or white, even though they have the facilities, with a few exceptions, making this kind of analysis. This is kind of analysis that Everett Lee and Gladys Bowles at the University of Georgia are interested in, but that's only two out of nobody at Atlanta University right now is doing that sort of research. But it's significant research to know what's happening.
And a lot of that data is in those central publications. You're going to find it from the state.
Yeah, but, to really get it out, you need somebody to program the computer,
get it
out easily rather than laboriously go through. There just hasn't been as much of that as there used to be. But certainly the impression one gets is that the makeup of Atlanta is different than it was 15 years ago.
Well, if the demography of the South is getting more and more like that of the entire nation, won't the same thing be true of its politics? We always interview Southern politics.
He's talking about Atlanta, not the entire South.
No, I'm talking about the entire South.
No, but I think it's a good question, Walt. I would say this, that there will be the tendency to get more and more like the rest of the nation. And the question becomes, if you look at the rest of the nation today, what makes the difference from, apart from the South, what makes the difference from New England to the mid-Atlantic states to the Middle West? Obviously, there are a lot of things that make those differences, and a lot of them are historical. Some of them are structural problems of government. I think that there will certainly be less identification of race as the critical element in Southern politics. I think that there will still be differences between politics in Southern states and politics in New Jersey or Connecticut or New York or Ohio, simply because there are different histories. There are some differences in style and approach that politics that are that you don't look to race as a critical element. But there'll be much more. The differences will not be marked as much by race. I would say,
or by rural domination,
or by
candidates.
Rural domination, in the sense that we had rural domination until the 60s. That's right.
Yeah. Or,
but you also had rural domination in some of the Middle Western states. Into.
I'm just giving some of the stereotypes, politicians who are demagogues.
If you're demagogues, if any, which is related to electoral reform, which is related to the racial problem, which is related to other kinds of reforms that are more concerned by access to the state legislature.
Well, then politics would also then become less personalized, wouldn't it? As you move more and more towards a two-party system, as the rest of the country has.
I think it's already much less personalized in the sense that it was 25 to 50 years ago in the South. I mean, it isn't a question. You already see much less emphasis on the factions in the Democratic Party in the South that